The JX starts today with the debrief, where JPR reporters discuss the stories they've been covering this week, including the Reading Fire Department charging a fee for some calls, higher pay sparking protests in Ashland, and a new center to help protect power lines from wildfire. I'm Maria Carter, JPR's news director.
I'm Emma J. Nelson, JPR's intern for the summer.
I'm Roman Battaglia, science, environment, and politics reporter.
And I'm Justin Higginbottom, public health and safety reporter.
Roman, let's start with you. You went to an Ashland City Council meeting this week that was also the site of protests by residents. What were councilors discussing?
Yeah, they were talking about pay raises for city employees there. It was actually sort of like this whole restructuring of the salary system for the city. This Ashland commissioned this compensation study to kind of compare the salaries that city employees in Ashland are getting paid with other comparable cities in Oregon. And that study ended up finding that the city was paying far less for a lot of the positions on average for city employees here. So they used that data for negotiations with the unions, and then they also used it to bump up the salaries for a lot of the other positions. So some positions got a bump of up to 19%
wow.
in their pay, which is I wouldn't be mad
yeah,
at that.
Yeah, no one would.
The average was about a 5% increase. And others who are also on top of the pay scale got put back on the bottom, which means they'll get more raises over the time. So the last time the city did a study like this was in 2008. So this is kind of a long time since the city has looked at how its pay has compared to other cities nearby.
And so why were the protesters upset about these pay raises?
Yeah, they were basically saying that it was irresponsible for the city to do this, especially in the tough economic and, you know, unpredictable economic time we're living in. The city's parks department has recently cut services to make up for a funding gap, including cutting things like the splash pad and the pool hours and things like that. And then the city of Ashland also approved these new utility fees earlier this year as well that were an effort to help fill in funding gaps and to prevent service cuts, even though the service cuts happened. So that's kind of – I talked to a lot of residents who complain that, you know, we're paying more fees and you're saying you weren't going to cut services and now you're cutting services anyways. So, you know, there's going to have to be more cost savings done to help pay for these salary increases that are proposed. So these residents are just kind of mad the city is putting more and more pressure on them to pay for these raises for city staff while also cutting these services. A lot of the pay raises are for upper management in the city, and a larger portion of the raises are going to executive staff like the city manager, and the protester said that's unfair.
Yeah. Well, it also sounds like council members themselves were kind of split on this. What did they have to say?
Yeah, so they weren't as controversial in terms of the contracts for the three unions that they were approving. They approved those 4-2. There were still some concerns about the fiscal responsibility stuff. But the last proposal was for the management and other non-union staff, and that was a lot more controversial. It tied 3-3 in the city council. The mayor had to break the tie and vote to approve it. The councilors who disagreed with it, they kind of agreed with what the protesters were saying there. They didn't want residents to be facing an increasing burden to pay for these raises. Some of them said that the city was rushing into this decision to approve this stuff and needed to slow down. They haven't done enough long-term financial modeling to look at the impacts of these raises and how the city is going to just function as a whole
and pay
in
for
the long
them,
term.
Not just this year, but in years to come.
Yeah, they're doing things sort of reactively of we need to raise this and then now we're going to cut more stuff and then we got to raise it, and they're not looking ahead enough. Councilor Jeff Dolly said that this compensation study that they did comparing is also flawed.
Cities vary widely in their structure, level of services, and staffing models. What works or costs less in one city might not be applicable here. More importantly, Ashland offers so many positive intangibles that contribute career value and quality of life that can only be found here. These cannot be measured on a spreadsheet, but they matter greatly.
So basically, you know, Ashland might offer a lot of things that other cities, you know, people might not want to go live in Klamath Falls, even though Klamath Falls might pay more for the same position because there's a lot of services and culture and other stuff that Ashland might offer. So they wanted the city to kind of slow down and take a better look at how these raises are going to affect the finances. You know, on the other hand, looking at the other council members, the people who supported it were mostly concerned about turnover and competition from other cities. They're basically worried that not increasing the pay means more people are going to leave and look for other jobs elsewhere that are going to pay them more. So they wanted to make sure that the city was keeping these employees to help the city through these tough financial period, saying, you know, it's better to have all of this institutional knowledge than let go of that and have more of a turnover.
And hiring people is expensive.
Yeah, hiring people is expensive. So, you know, these raises are already in effect now that they've approved them. They are retroactive till July 1st. So we'll kind of have to see what goes on with Ashland's finances in the future. But, you know, the protesters clearly did not get what they wanted.
Okay, well, thank you so much, Roman. Justin, you had a story about new fees in Reading for some calls to the fire department. What is the fire department charging people for?
Yeah, so they've started charging for something called lift assists, and those are non-emergency medical calls. Someone at the fire department gave me a bunch of examples of what that might include. For example, if someone has fallen and they need help getting up but doesn't necessarily need to go to the hospital or doesn't want to go to the hospital, that's one example. Or if someone needs help getting to their car to drive themselves to the hospital, or maybe even if someone can't get out of bed to use the restroom, which is actually a call they receive sometimes, those are all lift assists. And the Reading Fire Department gets around 1,200 yearly calls of this type, so quite a few. And firefighters say that's taking resources away from more serious calls, like fire, the main one, but also shootings or stabbings or drownings. And they might have personnel out on these lift assist calls when they need them in these more serious cases.
So this fee is supposed to dissuade people from these types of calls?
Right. The Reading City Council actually approved this fee back in 2023. And that was to offset the costs for these calls, but also kind of to dissuade or, you know, stop unnecessary calls. They actually approved fees for all emergency medical service calls from the fire department. But Reading Fire is rolling out the system gradually. They started with a nearly $500 charge only for lift assists, and that's been in effect since January 1st. And so far, around 500 people have received bills for this, although someone at the fire department said they're not aware of anyone actually paying their bill. He said people are still kind of in shock about this.
Yeah. Well, you know, speaking of bills, would insurance cover this for folks?
Maybe. It's kind of unclear. So, someone at the Reading Fire who I spoke with, they said private insurance could cover it, and if you get one of these bills, you're encouraged to submit a claim. It's unclear. There is a low income waiver, which the fire department has already received requests for, and those seem pretty easy to get. You know, if you're on a fixed income or you can't pay this fee, or it seems like this fee will, you know, drop you into poverty, then the fire department will work with you and you won't have to pay it. You just have to send them an email, basically. But, you know, the main goal is that they're really trying to stop repeat callers who, in some cases, need to think about their living situation. Maybe it's not best that they live at home. And someone at the fire department said they've even reached out to some residents' healthcare providers to talk about the issue and tell their doctor, you know, we're receiving daily calls from this person. This is what's up, which will normally surprise that doctor.
And so is Reading alone in this, or are other cities doing something similar?
From what I could find, it's not unique, but also doesn't seem to be that widespread. So some other cities in California have similar fees, and this looks to be more of a recent trend. So cities recently have started instituting these fees. The Reading Fire Department says the issue is that the services expected from the department and departments all over the country really have just grown over the years. Before, fire departments mostly put out fire. That's how they're structured. That's also how their funding is organized and structured. But people call the fire department for all sorts of things now.
Get that kitten out of the tree?
Yeah, which will cost you now. And Reading Fire hopes this at least starts a conversation in the community, which it seems like it's doing. And, you know, they want to hear about what residents want their fire department to do and also, you know, what they actually want to pay for.
Okay. Well, thank you so much, Justin. Emmett Jay, you visited the Pacific Corps Wildfire Intelligence Center in Medford this week. What is that and what's going on there?
Yeah, the center is actually a part of the utility company's 2025 wildfire mitigation plan. So its overall purpose is to make sure that PacifiCorp power lines aren't exasperating wildfire risk. So the staff are keeping an eye on the dry and windy weather conditions and how close active fires are to the company's equipment. While the workers there aren't the ones hitting the button to shut off the power, they are monitoring the fires and letting the PacifiCorp offices in Portland and Salt Lake City know when conditions for shutoff are met, when maybe it would be advisable, but it's still not up to them. From there, specialists at those offices decide whether to briefly de-energize the lines. The center opened up in May, and since then, workers have tracked more than 850 fires just in Oregon. And over 70 of those have resulted in temporary shutoffs.
So tell me, how are the workers there actually tracking the fires?
Well, I gotta say, I was shocked by how similar the control center looked to the JPR newsroom over the summer.
Oh, wow.
The monitors had a whole bunch of familiar websites open, like the crowdsourced Watch Duty and the AI detection site Alert West, both of which we're using for our own wildfire tracker. Staff members say that they'll see a fire on Watch Duty and look to see how close it is to PacifiCorp equipment on Alert West using some of those cameras or some of the other cameras that they have access to. Those AI cameras aren't perfect because they aren't able to distinguish between, say, the smoke column of a brewing fire or a dust plume from
a
tractor.
Just give it a few months. AI will catch up, I'm sure.
Until then, that's what the monitoring of the Wildfire Intelligence Center is for.
Got it.
PacifiCorp spokesperson Simon Gutierrez said that the center works closely with emergency responders as well. So when firefighters are going out to respond to a call, the Wildfire Intelligence Center gets alerted.
Why is the utility company keeping such a close eye on how close those fires are getting to its equipment and power lines?
Well, it wasn't that long ago that PacifiCorp was found to be liable in a class action lawsuit for not shutting off its power in those conditions. A Multnomah County jury found the company to be grossly negligent in 2023 for its contributions to the 2020 Labor Day fires. Despite the dry and windy conditions during that time, the company chose not to de-energize lines. We know what happened there. PacifiCorp has appealed to the judgment, and arguments could be heard as soon as 2026. Outside of the class action lawsuit, the utility company is also bracing for a very intensive trial schedule for the next couple of years. Thousands of people have sued the company for damages, and so far the utility has been ordered to pay nearly $500 million to plaintiffs. So with a whole team of people at this Wildfire Intelligence Center keeping an eye on the equipment around the clock, I imagine PacifiCorp is hoping to prevent and not play a role in future disasters.
Yeah, and it could potentially be a busy weekend for them. Hot weather, red flag warning.
Yeah, very much so.
Yeah. Well, we'll hope not, but we'll keep an eye on it. Justin, you had a story about a recall effort against two Curry County commissioners. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, so these petitions were filed by Lieutenant Jeremy Crone with the Curry County Sheriff's Department, and they're to recall Commissioners Jay Trost and Patrick Hollinger. So for Trost, the petition alleges he created a culture of fear and retaliation for county employees. He supported expenditures like additional legal fees to litigate against elected officials. He also allegedly avoided publicly engaging with residents by holding meetings in Brookings rather than Gold Beach. For Hollinger, the recall petition alleges he supported the takeover of public lands and proposed defying Oregon's sanctuary laws. And also it brings up that he's led an ongoing campaign against Sheriff John Ward in the county.
Well, and speaking of the sheriff, these are being filed by a lieutenant in the sheriff's department. The Curry County Board of Commissioners and the sheriff's department have been at odds lately, right?
Yeah, that's right. So, and Trost alluded to this when he spoke about the recall effort at a recent board meeting. You know, first he called the allegations against him baseless, and he noted they were pretty vague, maybe for legal reasons. But he said the real reason behind the recall is a lawsuit by the Curry County Board against the Sheriff's Department. And that lawsuit has asked for a court order requiring Sheriff Ward to provide commissioners with things like records and data from his office, to also attend county meetings, and also to hand over keys to county vehicles. So it's been a battle in Curry County over what the authority the board has over the sheriff's department for a while.
Well, quickly, I mean, we've got to wrap up here in a second, but when will we know if these recall petitions will actually be on the ballot?
So each recall petition needs to get 2,000 signatures, and as soon as those are verified, then we'll hear about an election. But right now, we're just waiting to see if they can get those signatures.
Okay, well, we'll stay tuned for more on that. That's it for the debrief this week. Thank you for listening. You can reach the newsroom with comments on our coverage and suggestions for things we should cover in the future through our news tip line. That's on our website, ijpr.org. And you can find this program and more at jeffexchange.org or on your favorite podcast platform.